This is Olive on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Writer Darren Wang, in a 2018 profile of John Hiatt, wrote, "More than any other songwriter of his generation, John Hiatt has chronicled the life of an everyday guy. Wild in his youth, joyful in the happiness of family, and then finally settling into the wisdom of age. If Bob Dylan is the poet laureate of rock and roll, then John Hiatt is its novelist. In fact, he's John Updike in lyric form. Over the course of his career, John Hiatt has released 24 studio albums, not including his album with Little Village, the supergroup that also included Ry Cooder, Nick Lowe, and Jim Keltner. Those guys were his backing band on his huge album, Bring the Family. His songs have been recorded by Bonnie Raitt, Eric Clapton and B.B. King, and Bob Dylan. John Hiatt's new 11-album vinyl box set, Only the Song Survives, will be out December 6th from New West Record. And John Hiatt is in studio. It is nice to see you.
How are you doing, Allison?
I'm doing great. I'll do even better if you play a song.
I'll play a song. Here we go. You gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta clear this field, build that wall. It was a prince of the county to the man of bone. The sheets were bloody and dirty and torn. Nobody saw nothing, not out this way. And they probably won't until the judgment day. You gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta lift up every stone now. You gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta clear this field, build that wall. There was a mighty whispering down at the church about the son of the father of the woman got hurt. Well, they were looking all over for somebody to pay. And that's you and me, sister, now. Every day you gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta lift up every stone now. Sister, gotta clear this field, build that wall. Now when the sun is bloody red, well, somebody is gonna be dead. Don't you cry one tear for me, 'cause I did what I could just to be free. You gotta lift up every stone now, sister, 'cause one is the truth and the other's a lie. You gotta lift up every stone now, sister, until they tear down the wall just to see you cry. You gotta lift up every stone. You gotta lift up every stone. You gotta lift up every stone now, sister, gotta clear this field, build that wall. We've got to clear this field, build that wall. We gotta clear this field and build that wall.
My guest is John Hiatt. He has a new 11-album vinyl box set, Only the Song Survives. It'll be coming out on December 6th. 11 albums?
I don't really know what to say to that. It's a lot of records in one set. God bless New West Records for putting it together. And they told me about it. I didn't even realize I'd made that many records in this millennium, but apparently I have.
What do you think about it coming out on vinyl?
I think it's great. I listen to vinyl at home. My kids listen to vinyl. All three of them listen to vinyl. And I've got a little record player down by where I, work in my workroom. And I just love that. Putting that side up, getting that side on, and then
putting the needle down and hearing that great old sound of snap, crackle, pop, and you know, a little low rumble if you have a cheaper turntable, and then just listening to it. Yeah, it's just such a great sound.
It's a sensual experience, I think, as opposed to
it is. It's
a download.
You might compare it to the difference between reading a physical book and reading one on your electronic device. You know, I guess it's that much. You know, it's sort of like that.
It's the hip thing to do now is to listen to vinyl.
Oh my God! Wait a minute, I've never been accused of that.
Why do you think so? Why do you think that people are gravitating back towards vinyl?
I'm going to guess that we want that very experience that you're describing. It's just, it takes a little time. You get involved. It's more than just staring at a screen. It's more than texting. It's more than talking on a device. You're engaged. You know, LPs have artwork and sometimes lyrics, and you know there's all these other elements to it. And also, I love the idea of, you know, four, five, six songs aside and listening to one whole, you know, you don't normally go over and pick it up after one song. Mm-hmm. And I think people like the idea of taking a little time in their lives like we used to do, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Whenever I'm prepping we do a lot of music on this show. Yeah. I'm like, I miss liner notes.
Yeah.
Where are the liner notes?
Because exactly.
it was like a little encyclopedia for each song. You saw who played bass and who did backing vocals.
It's so fabulous. And the great old disc jockeys. I used to listen to a jazz show. It was on public radio for years. Bob Parlocha, I think he came out of Philadelphia, and he used to name, he'd play a side and then he'd name all the musicians on it and where it was done, and you know, he called the musicians cats. I always liked that.
My guest is John Hiatt. This 11 album set, what did you notice about your career as you were faced with your work in mass like that?
It's been long. I noticed that right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of didn't realize that I'd done that many records in this, since 2000. I was a little bit surprised when they were actually counted up and put all together. But, you know, I feel pretty, you know, I feel pretty good about what I've done, and mm-hmm. I'd like to keep doing more. You know, is pretty much what it boils down to. I'm proud of the work, and you know, for what it's worth.
It's interesting thing that you should say because you still get to do it. Nick Lowe was here a couple of months ago, and he is very funny about playing music at his age, and about how you kind of have to just figure out yourself and be yourself and. What do you say? All those scarves and makeup, isn't that just exhausting? You can imagine him saying that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's so funny. Like he was fond of scarves and makeup ever in his career. But God bless him, I love that. He's a great guy, wonderful, wonderful person, a great artist, inspirational.
What do you think about, how do you think, let me ask this a different way. What are some of the choices that you made in your career and in your life that allow you to have a career at this point?
Well, the major choice I made was, it wasn't really a choice. I finally asked for help with my drug and alcohol problem mm-hmm. 35 years ago, and that was the turning point for me. I'd been, you know, pretty much just lost and not... you know, barely able to function in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And the music was suffering, and the music had become sort of ancillary to the sideshow that I was sort of way over involved in. I look back at it as like kind of like a, you know, just a little moment of, you know, I can't do this anymore, I need help, and just acknowledging that just in my own brain seemed to be the beginning of getting back to what I was feel like I was put here to do, which is make music.
Are you someone who celebrates your sober anniversary?
I've been known to. I don't make a big deal out of it, but I'm just thrilled to be a sober functioning member of, you know, the world, and I wasn't that 35 years ago. So, yeah, it's good.
That first year, what was difficult? I mean, I think the obvious thing is that you, when you become sober, many friends who've gone through this, that first year, what is especially hard about it? Or was especially hard for you? Was it performing? Was it?
You know, I had a great experience early in my recovery, and I was back touring. I had the luxury of not having to work for 6 months. So for 6 months, I pretty much just focused on recovery and involving myself in that community and getting as much help as I could get. And then I had to go back to work, and it was terrifying for the first, it was a European tour too, which is, you know, I kind of let it all hang out when I toured Europe back in those days. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of frightening to go back there. But the first, say, week, 10 days of shows, it was nerve wracking, and I was scared to death. And I thought, you know, I had all the versions of myself in my head telling myself, while I was playing, telling myself, you know, you're a phony, you're a fake, you're no good, these people know that, you're going to be found out, all the chatter, you know. And yet I'm up there playing because I'm allegedly a professional. I can do that. I can have multiple conversations with myself and perform. But it got to the point of being pretty miserable. And, you know, the guys, I was still young. I was 32. And the guys would hang out in the bar at the hotel afterwards, and there'd be fans, and they'd be chatting up and drinking, you know, and having fun. And I couldn't do that. I didn't know how to do that sober. So I'd go back up to my room and just you know, fall apart, basically. And that went on for about 10 or 12 days. And I remember distinctly in my mind, I was telling myself, you know, if I can't stay sober and do this for a living, then I'll go home. I'll quit. I'll find another thing to do. I don't know what the heck that would be because I was only skilled in this one area. And it kind of, the next show, the next night when I finally determined that I was willing to do that, the next show was about 4 or 5 songs into it, the voices started being quieter, and I just started getting into the music and grooving and having fun and enjoying the, you know, and it was, I kind of look on it now as like the gift was re-revealed to me as, you know, by the Great Spirit or whatever you want to call this kind of notion that maybe there's something bigger than you working here. And it was as if I was being told, you know, if you want to make music, this, you have, you know, the ability, you know, this is a gift. So go make music, you know. And that was sort of the end of my, you know, struggles in that department anyway.
My guest is John Hiatt. So when did you first write your first song?
I was 11 years old. And no, yeah, 11, toward the end of my 11th year.
I have an 11-year-old, so I'm picturing that right now, like an 11.
Yeah.
It could be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I had the good fortune. I was in a Catholic grade school, and there were two other guys that picked up the guitar the same year I did. We were all three of us were 11, and we got. I took lessons for a few months, and that didn't work out. So I begged my mother to buy me an acoustic acoustic guitar, and she bought me a Red Stella plywood, you know, acoustic guitar for about $25, and I bought a chord book by Mel Bay. And I learned 3 chords, and as soon as I learned 3 chords, I wrote this song about a girl who was getting a lot of attention in my class. She was sort of an early, she developed maybe a little bit sooner than some of the other girls, and all the guys noticed, of course, yeah. So I thought, well, I'll just choose her because all my friends think she's just the best thing since sliced bread. And I wrote a song, and I think it went something like, Beth Ann, ooh, she's a woman. Yeah. So there you go.
That's 11.
Auspicious debut. Yeah, that's 11.
That's very funny. You moved to Nashville in your later teen years. And we had Ken Burns on to talk about the documentary series, the country music documentary series. And in it, it talks about all these artists who were drawn to Nashville, into the Nashville music scene. What drew you there?
A couple of things. I had passed through Nashville the year before I moved there when I was 17, one of my many attempts to, you know, leave Indiana in the broad daylight. Thank you, Rodney Crowell. And I met a guy named Bob Frank, who was a folk singer. He was on Vanguard Records. He had just made a record and for Vanguard. And he was from Memphis, but he was living in Nashville. And he was writing songs for a publishing company, and they were paying him $25 a week. And I just thought, man, how do you get a job like that? How many Beth Ann's could I write for 25 bucks a week? And so I logged that and went back home. We never made it. We were going to California, never made it. Went back home and saved up some dough. And meanwhile, I bought a record by a group of session players called Area Code 615, which is the area code in Nashville. And they were playing songs like Beatles songs, like Lady Madonna, and blues songs, and pop songs, and country songs, and you know, that like Lady Madonna had a banjo on it. And I just thought, man, what are these hillbillies up to? You know, I just thought it was so great. And so I came, that record was a big influence on me to get me down there. And I later got to meet those guys. In fact, worked with a bunch of them. Norbert Putnam, the bass player, great bass player. They're about to be, he was the first Muscle Shoals rhythm section bass player.
Wow.
At Rick Hall's studio, and they're about to be inducted into the Musicians Hall of Fame this month, as a matter of fact.
My guest is John Hiatt. We'll have more with John after a quick break. This is All of It. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is John Hiatt. John has a new 11-album vinyl box set, Only the Song Survives. It'll be out on December 6th. When we left before the break, we were talking about how you arrived in Nashville. Being in Nashville, what effect did that have on your songwriting?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, Nashville was and still is, it's a songwriter's town. Everybody writes songs in Nashville. Your mailman writes songs in Nashville. And the song is, in Nashville, the song is revered and respected, and it's like a legitimate line of work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just so taken with that, and immediately, you know, this kid from Indiana who had, you know, self confidence and me were not on a first name basis, and to feel that sense that people cared about songwriters was just wonderful to me. Very, very, you know, what do you call it? Nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I felt. Like I was in a good place, in the right place.
How did being in Nashville affect your career?
I think by virtue of the fact that it's such a songwriter's town, I think I was allowed, you know, starting, I got there when I was 18, I got to work at, mm-hmm. at, you know, learning what it takes to write a song, a good song. And, you know, the evidence was everywhere. I was surrounded by, I mean, I didn't write country songs in those days. I've only written a few that you could probably call country songs, but I was working at a publishing company where people like Bobby Braddock were in there every day. He wrote D-I-V-O-R-C-E or He Stopped Loving Her Today, the great George Jones song, and many, many other wonderful songs. And just to be around these people, you know, amazing. Curly Putnam wrote The Green, Green Grass of Home, and you know, I mean, they were there. I saw these people. You know, I walked among them, you know, so it was like, wow, you know.
What went into your decision to leave Nashville?
The publishing deal ran out, and I was, I needed to make a living, and that dried up, and I, at the same time, had met a guy who said, you know, you need to go out, I need to put you out on the road, you know, you need to start going around and singing and playing. I said, sounds good to me. And he was based in San Francisco, so I moved out to San Francisco. Mike Kappas was his name, had Rosebud booking agency for years and years, and booked people like John Hammond and George Thorogood and people like that.
When you were a writer, when you were just being a writer, or
yeah.
Am I wrong in that? Were you ever just a writer? I can't remember my John Hiatt legends.
Yeah, I never felt like just a songwriter. And
not just. Were you only a songwriter?
Well,
to say that.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, either or.
Yeah,
it's okay.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. I had always, my whole reason was, I mean, I was writing these quirky songs that, you know, frankly didn't fit into the Nashville scene, which was you'd write a, You'd write a He Stopped Loving Her Today mm-hmm. on Monday. You'd take it to Billy Sherrill on Wednesday. George Jones would cut it on Friday, and it'd be out 3 weeks later. That's kind of how it was, the country music industry was in those days. And a big country hit was, 50,000 records. I mean, it was a different time. But so I didn't fit into that by any stretch. And I think the publishing company, Tree Publishing, who signed me up, realized that and figured, we'll just keep him around. Maybe he'll something will happen as an artist. And that's, in fact, what happened. I got signed to Epic Records about 3 years later, and 2 years later, and started recording, making records.
At what point in your career as a performer did you think, this is going to stick? I think this is what I'm going to do, as long as they'll let me do it.
probably the first Catholic youth organization sock hop I ever played. I was so compelled to get up on a stage and sing and play my songs. It just had so much meaning to me. And I think the first time I did with this little combo of guys that I'd put together, that we'd gotten together, and we were playing the hits of the day. This would have been 63, so it was the British Invasion was mm-hmm. happening, but also soul music, the whole Stax Volt thing, and Motown and all that. So we'd learn all these great songs, and also always have some of our own to play. These two other guys wrote their own songs as well, which I was very fortunate. These kids, Rick Panyard was one guy, and Richard Godey was the other guy's name. And so I was fortunate, that I was right there with these songwriter singers, and we got up and played our songs along with, a Beatles song or, one of the Rolling Stones covers of a Willie Dixon song mm-hmm. or whatever. It was just immediately, we were lifers. I mean, we just knew. And these guys actually went on and had careers, I think, in Christian music primarily, but they pursued it as well.
My guest is John Hiatt. Is it fair to say that Bring the Family was the big sort of commercial breakthrough?
Yeah, that's the one where it wasn't a huge seller initially, but I got my foot in the door, and I had not had my foot in the door prior to that. I was struggling, I was still playing. 10, 13, 12, 13 years after my first record, I was still pulling into towns and there might be 10 people at a show, so it was rough.
They were excited.
They were excited. Except the one guy who kept asking me to play Missing You. And I said, I don't know that song. And he'd go, you're lying. And by the end of the night, I figured out that he thought I was John Waite.
I knew where it was going.
No, not John Wayne. John Haight, as people used to call him. Yeah, John Hiatt. But Bring the Family was like, I went out on the road and people showed up. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was a club, but we've started filling clubs, and so there's no feeling as, there's no feeling like that. And my daughter Lily, who makes records as well, has recently started to experience a similar thing. I remember she texted me excitedly about a year ago and said, it was only a 100-seat club, but we sold it out. And I just remembered what that felt like,
Oh, I want you to brag on Lily Hiatt.
Oh, she's one of my favorite singer-songwriters, and I'm a little
biased.
Prejudiced about that, but she is, I really do think she's great. She just finished a fourth record, and it's coming out, I think, spring 2020.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
We'll have her on.
Yeah, great, good.
Well, let's make another singer-songwriter's day. Who are some other youngish singer-songwriters that you are really excited by and get into it when you hear their music?
Wow. The records I've liked recently, and they're maybe not singer-songwriters, although they are singer-songwriters, are a lot of these young pop artists, like mm-hmm. Lizzo. She kills me. She's so freaking good. It's like hearing Prince for the first time or something. And who else? I love Colter Wall. I think mm-hmm. he's really good. Gary Clark Jr. has always rung my bell. Yeah, I like him a lot.
Yeah,
he's not one of the younger young guns anymore, but still young by my standards. But yeah, there's just so much great music floating around. There's a lot of kids in Nashville that are doing a lot of interesting things. So yeah, it's good.
At this point, you know, you could have a porch somewhere and just play around when you feel like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're still making music. You're still out there. You're still doing this.
I love for me, it's still the three-legged stool. I like writing the songs. I like recording them, and I like going out and playing them. To me, that completes the loop, you know. So, yeah. That's, you know, I've always loved doing all three, and so I figure why, you know, as long as I can still physically come out on the road, the bad thing about the road is, of course, the other 22 hours when you're not playing, it's just, it can wear on you. We travel by bus and, you know, a lot of miles, and, you know, I mean, if you've seen one hotel room, you've seen them all, I guarantee it. It doesn't matter if it's a Ritz-Carlton or a Motel 8, it's just a box with a bed in it, and, you know, after a while. So you know, I live for playing, you know, that's why I still do it.
One last question, then I'm going to ask you to play a song. Of all the changes you've seen in the music business, what's one that you're not that thrilled about, and then what's a change you think is really positive, especially for artists?
Well, it's not that I'm not thrilled about it. It's because of when I came up, the age of the long player, the LP, the 10 or 12 song body of work is kind of, you know, that's kind of getting to be a thing of the past. And I suppose it started with, some would say, iTunes, when you started to be able to get one song at a time. And we've become, I guess, that kind of culture. You know, you kind of just, I mean, music is never going to die. We know that. Music is the essence of life for most people in one form or another. And, you know, that idea of, as you've described at the top of this interview, of sitting down with a record and getting into the whole experience and taking that time for yourself to enjoy it. It's like a mini home concert, you know. And I suppose things are replacing that now. You've got these videos of live concerts, and now you've got these amazing sound systems, and you can listen in, you know, 20 speakers surround, and you're enveloped by the music, you know. And I think that's exciting. I think that's wonderful that technology is allowing us to do those sorts of things. And the thing I like most about music is how accessible it is, how you can go online and find just about any record ever recorded. And when I was a kid, you know, we had to work hard to find, you know, to find a Willie Dixon or a Muddy Waters record in Indianapolis, Indiana, in 1962, 61. It was tough. It was tough going. A lot of times you had to order them, you know. So that's exciting. Kids have their, you know, have access. We have access to so much great music. It's like you're on an archaeological dig all the time, you know, for the sounds.
Can I get you to play one more song for
yeah,
us?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to play this song. I was working it up the other day because I hadn't played it in a while, and it's part of this box set. I can see by your tears, all through the years, you still hear the call of the blue. I can see by your face, it's a lonely old place you've gone and gotten into. Well, I've got this smile I've had for a while, ain't exactly brand new. It's no wicked grin, and it's good and warning, and I'd like to give it to you.
through trouble and pain, in wind and in rain. I think it will fit you just right. When you gave it to me, I just couldn't be free. Now I'm standing right here in your light. And if your life's upside down, it might look like a frown. Depends on how you wanna see. So here's looking at you, and when I'm upside down too, why it looks like you're smiling to me. So I've got this smile I've had for a while. It ain't exactly brand new, but it's no wicked grin, and it's good and worn in, and I'd like to give it to you.
John Hiatt has a new 11-album vinyl box set, Only the Song Survives. It will be out on December 6th. John Hiatt, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Allison.
This is All of It.